Welcome to today's topic, building your IT management pipeline. Many of you know me, but for those who don't, my name is Eric Bloom. I'm the executive director and founder of the IT Management and Leadership Institute. But now let's begin by asking a question. And that question is that, what is this management bench strength thing anyway? Why do we want to build a pipeline? What's it all about? And this will be the first, say, 4 or 5 slides that we'll go through. IT management bench strength refers to, and this is important here, it's the quality and the quantity of the people that you have in your department, of which you may be one of, if looked at from above, certainly, to move from individual contributor to management positions, to take on additional or different management responsibilities within IT, or to be promoted into higher management positions. Because, one person gets promoted from manager to director, that's all great, but someone's then going to have to take that manager's job. So anyway, this is the combination of it. As you see, what it really does is it drives flexibility, or let me say, provides flexibility to senior management on how to best configure and work the organization, which we'll see some more of in the next few slides. Now, as far as where the people come from, they can come from two sources. And no, let me say, no rocket science in this slide, so to speak. But they can come internal. Namely, is that they can come within your team. But then there's an expense, time, effort, and so on that we'll actually see in a later slide. But basically, building people from within. There's a couple of organizations I know of, one actually that comes to mind, that they never hire anybody from external, which is next. They only promote from within, which has advantages and disadvantages. They say internally that it's great being there, that you're going to be a candidate potentially for promotion again and again and again. But the downside is it can become a little bit of an echo chamber because all of the things that you learn, all the things you've learned and so on are just from within the organization rather than bringing in new perspectives and new points of view. But again, they both have their advantages and disadvantages. But bottom line, this is where you get them. You either grow people internally or you bring them in at time of need externally at a manager, director, VP job, whatever it might happen to be. Quite frankly, I would say 99% of organizations do a combination of the two. Because if you have this bench strength, and for this slide, let's look at bench strength in general. See, even like beyond the specific IT department. What it does is, well, it allows you to properly manage your staff. You need a certain amount of capable management, management professionals to be able to lead, whether it's certainly IT, but HR, marketing, finance, engineering, manufacturing, pick an area. All of these areas to execute properly need well-trained management team. It allows, for example, within IT, but in other areas also, to move toward new technologies or enter new markets for the products being produced. It allows you to meet competitive challenges, by competition coming in. Gee, we have to move toward this technology. We have to create this new product. We have to market in a new way. But it gives, competent managers will have the ability to be able to flex, so to speak, as needed to grow the organization. As you have a bigger organization, well, you need more managers. The ability to effectively reorganize and to nurture your future leaders. But also what you really have to consider as part of this is all that sounds well and good. Sometimes you need to replace existing managers who are underperforming that may choose to leave on their own or, quite frankly, may be replaced. So all of these are the reasons that provides the flexibility behind allowing managers if they have, or senior managers if they have strong bench strength to be able to perform these tasks. But now let's bring it into IT. Having IT bench strength, what that allows you to do is it allows you the proactiveness toward your user community. Why? Because if your managers are properly trained and also that there's enough of them, they can spend not only time managing their teams, but it gives them more time to actually interact with the business community. Next, it facilitates involvement in business planning. Again, because with a proper amount and well-trained IT management team, you've heard me say in other webinars or for those people who've taken our certification classes and such, is that an IT manager can no longer just be the chief techie. What they need to be is a strong business leader who, by the way, knows how to run an IT function or overall IT. It provides quality client support, again, because the IT people can be spending more time, the managers, more time working with their business counterparts. It also will help drive innovation, and it will also help facilitate IT's thought leadership. The reason for that one, again, is because as managers are well-trained, their teams are doing good things, there's enough of them to go around, is IT can be thinking of things at a higher level. But now, you know, with that, where do you need bench strength? Where do you need quality IT managers? The bottom line is, well, everywhere. And I like to divide that everywhere into two parts. First, it's within your within the technical roles. You know, help desk, infrastructure, cloud infrastructure, business analysis, the other things shown here, cloud architecture, which is what I was trying to bring to the front. But also in the non-technical areas, you know, that tend to, you know, they're not de-emphasized, they're of enormous importance. However, you know, when you're thinking of IT, you tend to think of all the technical stuff. By no means underestimate vendor management, client service, internal R&D type functions, should your IT organization be large enough to have one, process design, methodologies. In both of these lists, it goes on and on. You know, for IT overall to be a well-tuned machine, as they say, you need proper leadership as well as individuals in all of these areas. Like, I'm just going to pick on one in the non-technical, vendor management. You know, IT is extremely vendor heavy in regard to, you know, the products and services that we bring in to both facilitate the work we're doing within IT, as well as develop applications and so on to support the user community that we're there to serve. But with all good things, there are challenges. You know, there are actually many challenges with, you know, we can say, oh, you know, build IT bench strength, bring in good people, train them, do this, do that. But there's a lot of things that we need to consider that, quite frankly, make this a little easier said than done. The first is finding and hiring and developing the right people. Next is time to execute your bench building process, which we'll talk about soon. But certainly, you know, if you're helping to mentor people internally, whether it's individual contributors to move into tech lead or first IT manager roles, or even in the middle and higher level IT management positions, is it takes time. It takes time of these senior people, of human resources people, resources needed to send them to training, give them internal training, you know, provide them the psychological safety to be able to try things, make mistakes, learn from it, and gain knowledge from their experience. Also, you know, you need the buy-in of senior leaders. If you're going to say, hey, you know what, is that either for yourself and your team or for others, you need resources for training. You need time to be able to send people. You may need to hire additional people, say, better and more qualified than you thought that you would initially need because you know that Mary is retiring in 6 months and you want to put someone in a position to be able to grow into that role. Or to take whoever's going to be replacing Mary to take their role. Next is another challenge is organizational issues. You know, there are downsizing. You know, there's mergers, there's acquisitions, all of those things that sort of give you more team than you need, stretch your team too thin. There's a merger, and some of the people don't like the idea that the merger happened. And what do employees of all levels do? When they're unsatisfied, they vote with their feet and they leave. Next is just ongoing support for the process. This isn't something that you say, yeah, we're going to build management bench strength. You know, you send two people or five people or 10 people to a class and you go, phew, okay, that's done. No, this is an ongoing effort that needs ongoing senior management support to be able to provide. Next is that how do you know that the people that you're training and the people that you're bringing in, that they're going to be good managers? Or when they're at that level, how do you know that they'll be good directors? You know, there's a little bit of faith that you have to take into this because quite frankly, the measurements of what really makes a good manager or what really makes, you know, a good next level up, you know, trying to figure that out from one level down, you know, it's doable. There are some ways to go about it, but you know, measurement is not for the faint of heart when it comes to trying to justify the expenditure, the time, the efforts, etc., to try to do this. And lastly, what's going to be happening is you're going to lose talented people in the pipeline. You know, why are your talented people going to leave? Well, because they can. You know, your best people, whether they be individual tech, individual contributor technologists, or those in the management ranks, you know, if they're of high quality, high business acumen, high communication capabilities, and all those kind of things, they love learning new technologies, they're quick studies. Those are the people who will be, that you want to keep the most. But also on the other side of that coin, they're probably also the people who are the most marketable. So, you know, not only do we have to grow them, but we have to keep them happy in regard to their job satisfaction at various levels and through their time at the organization. We'll be talking a little bit more about that also. Moving sort of quickly, because we have a lot that I want to be able to cover with you. And from where we are is we are awesomely right on time. This is great. But now what I'd like to do is let's get into, basically, it's a multi-step process to build your pipeline. The first step, you have to find the right people to hire. And obviously, we have one or more slides behind each one of these items. Next is, then you have to hire them. You know, all right, it's one thing to find them. It's another thing to get them to work for you versus someone else, making sure that the rec is open, you know, all that kind of stuff that you want to do. So after that, onboarding. You know, you've hired them. Okay, they show up on Monday. You know, and I'll just pick on someone from here. You say, you know, hi, Cullen. Great to see you. You're here. Well, what are you going to do? There are things that need to be in place prior to, say, Cullen coming in. And congrats on the new job. I don't know. But anyway, is that to make sure that he wants to stay, that he comes up to speed quickly, you know, that he becomes part of, and you'll see this term again, the fabric of the organization and wants to stay, just becomes part of the team, which quite frankly, in when you hire, if you hire anyone who's going to be working with the firm virtually, it's even more of a challenge because they're not getting to hang out and go to lunch with everybody every day. Step four, initial training. You bring them in, you train them, you know, you show them where the cafeteria and the restroom is, blah, 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 and some other stuff. But then you have to get them initially trained, up to speed on what their job role is going to be, who they have to know, et cetera. Next is then there's employee evaluation. Gee, did we hire the right people? And, you know, is this person potentially someone that we could promote as part of, you know, the whole topic that we're talking about today? And then, you know, employee nurturing. You know, you want to help grow them, give them additional skills, make them happy, all that kind of stuff that we as managers do, certainly on an, or should do on a day-to-day basis. And then, you know, there's employee promotion. You make that decision, gee, you know, is this person, does this person want to be promoted? That's the first thing. But then if they do or they're considering it, is it something that you would consider doing also for them or to them, I should say? And then lastly, you know, just like when you wash your hair, what do they say? Wash, rinse, and repeat. It's the same thing here. This is an ongoing process. But in this case, as people move up, it's evaluation, back to step five, it's evaluation, nurturing, and promotion. Now, as we go through this, what's really, really interesting when, you know, we analyze this and put this presentation together is what we realize, which we are, it's one of those things you always sort of know, but you have to bring to the front, is this process that we're going to be talking about as we go through these eight steps. Whether you hire someone in as a director level to move eventually toward being the CIO, or whether you hire in, you know, a college intern that you just gave a full-time job to, is that these eight steps are really, really applicable at all levels of management and across all professions. But now let's move to the first one, finding people to hire. Well, where are you going to find them? You know, is what I will say to you is don't leave it to just to HR to find your people. They're going to work for you. It should be a partnership. Just don't go to recruiting and say, yeah, I can't find anybody to hire. You know, the recruiting part of HR isn't finding people that I like. Well, I would say if you just sort of lived with that, hired someone you didn't like, because they were the sort of the best you could find, you know, sort of what do they refer to that as, you know, the least evil of the person that you could bring in. What I would say to you is shame on you. You should be actively looking for people also. Now, sometimes we bring in a person and they didn't quite work out how we wanted. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about just being reactive to the people that HR bring in. So these are other places. You should be doing what you're going to see here now, even before maybe you want to hire people to bring in to start building up these networks. but certainly, you know, internal hires from around the company. There's a fascinating one about this. When you open up a rec internally to be able to hire someone, now this assumes that the job posting that you opened internally, that there are many, many people internally that are qualified for the job. But if there are 10, 20, 50 people, 100 people in your company who would love to have the job that's the job description that you're providing, if no one applies, then that's a really good time for you to sit back and say, wow, you know, what's my reputation as a manager? Not at the manager level, but at the individual contributor level. Because you know what? They all talk, you know, and say, hey, I hear that, I'll just say me. I hear that Eric has a job open in his department. Should we apply? You work for Eric. And if they're saying, no, keep away. I'm trying to get out myself. The guy's awful. Or let's say, for example, Andrea, let's say that you have a rec open and people are falling all over themselves to apply to work in your department. What that means is probably not only is it a good job, but the thing is the people the level down are talking and they'll say, hey, you work for Andrea. How is it? Oh, she's the best manager I ever had. Okay, awesome. So you'll get more people in. So it's not something for you to beat yourself up about or, you know, just say, hey, look at all the people applying for my job. But just take it as a mental reference of yet another way to analyze sort of how you're seen by the people who are level down, who, you know, generally won't go over to you when you say, well, I was going to apply for the job, but I heard it was you and yuck. You're never going to hear that comment. So, but you can find it from other directions. Next, previous applications that HR knows about. Good HR organizations keep track of all of those people. Maybe there were two people you wanted to hire and you only had one rec. So you brought in Kevin. And then a little bit later, you say, gee, we have another rec that's open for the same kind of job. Wow, you know, I really like Jason when I met him. Let's see if he's still available. Well, that let's see if he's still available is really a job that generally speaking, HR does a good job with. Next, bring in friends, ask the people working for you, but not all the people who are your best performers. Ask them if they have any friends who'd like to work here. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One of which is top performers tend to hang out with people who are top performers. It's just sort of, you know, their ilk. It's just sort of who they are. You know, they're very professionally minded. They're smart. They're this, they're that. So as a result, their friends may be really good candidates to bring in. The other thing about doing this also is if they have a friend, oh, they really like, went to high school with the guy, he could sort of do the job, but I really don't want, you know, this person working here because they're not a top performer. They will just mentally weed out their friends that won't be a top performer. The reason is because they don't want to be seen as someone who suggested people to come into the company that turned out to be bad employees. Also, by the way, if you have one of the top or the leading indicators for reduced attrition, that means people not leaving, are friends at work. There are a couple of others also, but that's a key one. So now if your top performer brings in their friend who's a top performer, and the two of them are really happy working together, probably they're both going to stay for an extended period of time for that reason. Next, acquaintances from professional associations. You know, for example, I'm a member of SIM, the Society for Information Management. Great, great association. I think there's 4,000 or 5,000 people nationwide. But the thing is the people that I've met there, I've said to them, hey, I'm looking for a great project manager. Do you know anybody? Or they may be part of that. You know, for those of you, say, for example, in user groups, you know, for particular types of software. I don't know, Amazon AWS, Azure, some particular application level, et cetera. Is that, someone just came up, said they love SIM. Great organization. Which chapter are you in, if I can ask? I'm in the Boston chapter. Someone just put that into the Q&A. but anyway, is that it's a good way to find other people. Like, let's say, for example, that you're implementing, you know, I've been picking on Workday recently. Is that, Portland great chapter, actually, is that I think I may know someone from that chapter. Good organization. Anyway, that obviously just came in Q&A. But anyway, is that Where was I? Oh, yeah. Is that for professional associations, if you're associated with, say, the Workday user group, you're the manager of it within your department, you're gonna, if you go to those user group meetings, you're gonna learn really pretty quick who the good Workday people are that you wanna hire or that you don't wanna hire. It'll give you some great contacts. Next, your LinkedIn connections is that I would say, you know, connect with people that you meet, you know, of your profession. I didn't use LinkedIn for a lot of years, actually. You know, people who wanted to connect to me, I said, yeah, sure, yeah, sure, yeah, sure. Well, I blinked, you know, like 4 years later, and all of a sudden I had a couple of hundred connections so that when actually I started the ITML Institute, they were of great help to me moving forward. Next is staff from previous employers, people who worked for you, worked with you, or just that you knew were really good sort of through the grapevine. Next is prior consultants. You know, there's a whole art, it's sort of part art and part science, of taking consulting people and moving them in to being, to, you know, hiring them into permanent roles. Some will never want to do it, you know, some will be open to it. But think of the contractors that you've had over time. If you bring those in, just make sure you're not breaking any contractual rules with the firms of how you got them. Next is graduate students at local colleges. You know, if you are hiring people for data management, there's this new thing. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called AI. I'm just kidding. Everybody has. But, you know, is that if there's a master's program nearby and you're trying to find people to work in AI and they have a master's in AI sciences at the local university, call over to one of the professors and say, hey, I need to hire a couple of people. Do you know anybody? You know, that's a real untapped resource. Next is, you know, certainly the traditional online and HR resources working with their recruitment departments, et cetera. But also what you need to be careful of, so careful of now. I never knew that this was a thing for a long time, but the more and more I'm talking to people, the more anecdotal stories I'm hearing about this, about fake candidates. Now, what fake candidates are is that they will show someone as being a great resume they'll send in. They may even set up a fake LinkedIn saying about all the places they worked and all the things they did, et cetera. Or it might be a real person. They're using that real person's name in order to get hired. And then if it's virtual, all of a sudden when that person is hired, is that the person who is working for you day to day doesn't come on camera. The reason is either the person who interviewed and did great and knew all this stuff, they're subcontracting it. You know, this, you know, they're using it to get the job themselves. You're paying them $100,000. They find someone potentially, you know, presumably not as well skilled. They're paying them $50,000 to do the job as long as they never put the camera on. And they're pocketing $50,000 themselves and subcontracting themselves out to multiple jobs. You know, I knew where this came because then there's all sorts of other problems. Not only are you hiring a person that is, you know, not honest, but then who knows what this other person does regarding, you know, the intellectual property that your firm has, anything that's secure data, entrance to your networks. So, you know, as funny as it sounds, make sure that you be really, really careful that your person you're hiring is actually the person you're hiring. I know someone that this happened to, and it took them actually months to get this person fired, because they had to go through this whole process and other issues, et cetera. Cost the company a lot of money, a lot of time. It was a security leak and so on. So anyway, if you're hiring from the outside these days, particularly people virtually that are never going to be in the office, be really, really sure that, well, it's them. So anyway, you've hired people or you want to hire people. The next thing is that how do you select the right one? You know, you're going to be, you want to involve other people in the decision-making process. You know, I'm thinking of a job that actually I took many years ago. It was a CEO, it was my first CIO role. And I think I interviewed but everybody but the janitor when I went to work there. I must have had, I don't know, 15 interviews, maybe 20, something. I sort of lost count after a while. And, you know, I'm thinking, wow, they're going to hire me. They keep bringing me back. They keep bringing me back. They keep bringing me back. I just wanted them to make me an offer. But anyway, they eventually did. And one thing that I learned through that experience is once I was hired, it had two huge advantages. One of which was, is I knew everything that was going on there because I met with all of the business users I'd been working with. I met with all the people who'd be direct report, my boss, a couple of other people on the C-suite, et cetera. So, it allowed me to really hit the ground running, so to speak, when the job started. But also because all of these people who had input into my performance review, input into me being hired, is they felt that they were part of the process. And I was hired with all of these internal supporters who wanted me to succeed because they were part of the decision-making process. So, next is, if possible, have you and a couple of people bring somebody out, bring them out to lunch. The reason for that is when you break bread with someone, when you have a meal with someone, talk casually about who you are, in a local restaurant and that kind of thing, you really get to know them a little better because it's less of a business environment if you're sitting, say, in an Italian restaurant, each of you having a glass of Chianti and chicken Parmesan. It's just a different way that you get to know people. Next is, what I always did, my best hires over the years, when I hired on personality fit. So I used to say it as is that when I hire, someone who fits into our culture, I used to refer to him, as a good person who's a quick study. Those have always been my best hires. The reason is someone who fits into the organization organizationally, is that maybe they're a little bit underqualified, but they can grow into the role. Because 6 months later, you hire them. So let's say, for example, that I hired one I picked on yet, Jennifer. Let's say I bring Jennifer in and I hire her. She was a little bit underqualified, but she really fit in with the team. She was a quick study. Well, guess what? 6 months later, she's been doing the job 6 months. So now she's fully qualified. Now I'm going to look for a name that is not on here. I don't see anyone named Joe. If it is, forgive me, I missed seeing your name and I apologize for using your name in the next one. But let's say that I hired Joe. Joe is fully qualified, like 100%, maybe even a drop overqualified. He has great experience in what we want to do, but he's sort of a schmo. Well, guess what? 6 months later, he's still fully qualified to do the job, but he's still a schmo. So as a result, is that's why when you think forward, be willing to train a little bit. Now, also, then you're going to make the decision. Think in your mind's eye of people that you've trained previously. I mean, hired previously. At some point, it goes click in your mind, and you go, "Wow, I want to really hire that person." Is that David just seems to be the person that I want to bring in for this role. So mentally, what you do is you switch gears, very subtly, or you may be the kind of person who says, "All right, now done." And all of a sudden, your conversation with David converts from being interviewing them for the role to marketing and selling them the role of why they should work for you. So what happens is so that once you make that decision, you become a salesperson and they become the buyer, so to speak, of the person to bring in. So you want to gain an understanding of their needs and wants. Where appropriate, what you do is you get you get them to be things become a little bit more flexible. They'd really like 3 weeks of vacation instead of two. And well, they're at that cusp of organizational level that where the people the next level up get 3 weeks instead of 2 weeks. You say, all right, you know what is part of hiring? We can get you that third week. You can play with some of that stuff. But what you got to be really, really careful with is I'm going to show you a term we're going to see a little bit later. And what that is it's beware of discrepancy theory. And that relates to job satisfaction that you'll see later. If you sell the person too strong on the job, oh, come here, we have catered lunches every day. And then by catered lunches, you mean that, sometime, like 3 times a week, they'll bring in from Subway or Burger King, not exactly what they expected. Or all of the users here are great and everybody loves IT. And some people love IT and some don't. Is that job satisfaction is influenced by the gap between the individual's expectations of being through the roof, because that's how you sold it, and the actual experiences that they're seeing on the job. So be careful not to sell it too much, because when they get there, they don't want to feel like they, as the expression goes, was sold a bill of goods. But we'll see that one again later. Next step three, technical onboarding. Certainly, when people come on board, they're going to get, the typical HR organizational thing. What's the industry? Who's the competition? What's the organization? Maybe a video from the CEO. Organizational structure. What are our missions, values, and mission, vision, and values? All that like organizational stuff. And by the way, that's true whether you're in a for-profit company, in a municipality, federal government, nonprofit. It's a general type of things related to that. For example, if you work for the federal government, then there might be a 5-minute 5-minute video that they'll want you to watch with from who's ever president of the at the time and whoever is the chief secretary in charge of that organization that you happen to be in. That kind of stuff. But if they're going into a technical role, what you also want to do is give them a technical orientation. Major nightly processes, should you run one, key methodologies, naming standards, the primary vendors you work with, the procurement process, the major systems, those four or five systems that sort of run the place and everyone else either connects to it on the front end or feeds data to in the back end, organizational data flows, internal development and operational tools. The reason you want to do this, and this is a theory that you'll, or a concept you'll see coming up again, is they're going to learn it anyway. If you can give them this little bit of orientation, which we'll actually talk more on orientation in the next slide, then what it does is it shortens their learning curve and lets them come up to speed and be more productive more often. And also, oh, I think I'm going to hold off on the also related to that until the next slide or two. Previews of coming attractions. But anyway, then you get into the initial employee training. So, all right, they're hired, they're there, you've shaken their hand, you've given them some general orientation, et cetera. So then what's next within the orientation internally now? This is the orientation about the job now, not the organization in general. So specifics about their job, what they'll learn. And we have another slide behind each one of these. I just want to show them all to you at a high level. Training, hard and soft skills that are needed for them to be at their best in that role. Coaching, someone who's teaching them sort of the tips and the tricks within the specific job role. And also then on the job training. So now let's go through these one at a time, beginning, as you might expect, with orientation. Is all right, who? And the orientation, if you think of it from who, what, and why. All right, the who is who are all the people? Now, this is doubly, triply, quadruply, is that a word? Quadruply? Quadruply important if they're working virtual because they'll never get to meet people, except maybe here or there opportunistically. So introduce them to everyone that they're going to need to know. Set up, if it's virtual, set up email meetings between maybe the three of you or just the two of them. You'll be there for a couple of minutes. Say, oh, hi, Brooke. Yeah, I'd like to introduce you to Kevi. Have a good conversation and then leave the call. But it could be any of that kind of stuff. But again, what you want to do is you want to bring them together related to this. So anyway, is that who are the vendors and the vendor contacts? Have you ever tried to get in touch with a vendor and you just don't know who to talk to there? It's of incredible value. Check here. There we go. It's incredible value for you to be able to make these connections. Just think about it. You were hired. You have to call the vendor about an issue and you don't know anybody there. You call their 800 number. God knows who you're going to get. So anyway, all that's the who. Next is the what. The what are the tasks to be performed. So in other words, this is where you're teaching them the methodologies, the processes, the technologies, the best practices, the stuff that they need to do hands-on on a daily basis. If it's into a management role, then it's, what are the processes, methodologies, technologies, and best practices that they'll be responsible for and overseeing. But then the why to this, and this is the second of three times you'll be seeing this, but the why is it? It's to motivate them. Retain them, so retention, and minimize their learning curve. The reason it's so important, and I'm talking about retention here, you just hired them, is statistically, it is most likely that someone is going to leave within the first 3 months of being hired. The reason being is let's say that we hire Matthew. And Matthew is hired. We really like him. He's really excited. He gets here, and then the orientation isn't very good. We send him at a desk, don't connect him to anybody. Oh, my meeting with him today, and to show him to introduce him to folks. Oh, I've just been too busy, and I canceled the meeting with him for 2 or 3 weeks. All right, well, Matthew's sitting there saying, "All right, you hired me. What do you want me to do?" In the meanwhile, Matthew's, not looking for other positions, but let's say that he interviewed at another company and he gets a call 2, 3 weeks in and says, "Hey, Matthew, our hiring freeze just ended. Any chance you'd like to come to work with us?" Now, Matthew's going to be at that key point and say, and think, well, he already has a job, but been here 3 weeks and they haven't even said hello to him. So all of a sudden, he might be more amenable. He doesn't know anybody there. He has no real vested interest there. It's short enough time. He doesn't even have to mention it on his resume. And he goes and he takes the other job. And now you're back to square one. So this is another one of the whys, in addition to the learning curve related to it. Look at that as sort of protection for you to not have to start the whole process over. Now let's talk about training. Now the training is the diagram here. Is that 70%, and these aren't my numbers, these are the numbers that I think everybody uses, give or take. If you say, well, why is training 10% and not 15%? It might be 15%, it might be 5%, but look at the order of magnitude here. 70% of the stuff that we're going to learn is on the job, which is why, quite frankly, mentoring and coaching that we'll be talking about as we move forward is so important. But anyway, is what the training and the coaching does. Is there accelerators for the on-the-job training? If you say, excuse me, have decided to move to a cloud architecture, and you're bringing someone in, or just someone who's working for you even now, and say, rather than say, oh yeah, get a book and learn about AWS on your own, what you do is you put them through the AWS Fundamentals class. It gives them a sort of a technical basis and understanding of what's going on, and then they get back to the office and they start working on it. And you set them up with an internal mentor that says, oh, yeah, name it this. Oh, you can't find that? Yeah, that's the one thing that's not in this package. You got to go to the other cloud package to get that one. Oh, yeah. Would they have eventually found it after a day of searching? Yes. But someone who's mentoring them in the role, sort of an ongoing teacher, can dramatically, again, speed that learning curve, all of which then comes to really their on-the-job experience. But what is it going to be in? Look at it in two perspectives. And this is really based on the job that they're taking. The hard skills, business processes, specific tasks, methodologies, all that stuff that we said in the previous slide, they have to know what they were. Here is where you're teaching them what they are. If you're using Kanban or Agile or Lean IT, teach them what they need to know about it. If you're doing particular programming languages, if you're doing some stuff in AI and maybe you're programming in Python, they don't know Python, put them in a training class, have them do a little tag team programming with somebody who knows it, and then have them expand their knowledge on their own. But don't underestimate, particularly if they're going to be in some type of supervisory, tech lead, manager's position, or whatnot, don't underestimate the incredible importance of soft skills. Another place soft skills is really important, actually, is help desk. You hire someone to go to people's PCs, person to person, to update their P to fix their PC, install a new piece of software. Someone calls in to the service desk, whatever it is. When that person, who might be a senior member of the organization, is talking to that newly hired help desk person, at that moment, that newly hired help desk technician is representing your entire IT organization. And if that goes poorly, then that's going to be an extra sort of chink in the armor, as they say, of, well, is IT really a good organization? Do I like them? I don't know. The only time I've talked to IT in the last 6 months is with two help desk people. And you know what? Both of them, they were rude. They eventually fixed it. They came late. They were obnoxious. I had to call them twice. That will wear on IT's clout and IT's reputation within the overall organization. So anyway, all right, you got them in, you got them trained. Now you're going to do some coaching with them. First is why. The why behind it, as mentioned before, is it accelerates their learning curve, makes them more productive more quickly, which is something we all need as managers. We got lots going on in our department, and if we're hiring someone new, it's probably because we're a little behind on things to begin with. Next minimizes their chance of going with a different employee. And also what you start to do here by coaching is you begin to integrate them into the fabric of the organization. Why? Because they're working with a coach. Who's the coach? The coach is someone else who works for you. So now they're developing, you know, rapport and sort of an internal best friend that they can go to ask questions. On the what? It's going to be giving them technical feedback. On the job that they're performing, like, oh, don't do it this way, do it that way, helping them sort of find the internal ropes in your systems and in working with people, but also navigating internal politics, personalities, internal processes, where the restroom is, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, the how, I suggest doing it in two ways. You know, it's not, hey, call me when you need me. But, you know, that one is, well, do I really want to call the person? I just talked to them yesterday. I don't want them to think I'm a nudge and can't figure stuff out on my own. But then there's the other side of the coin, because that one, obviously, you would want to have regular scheduled meetings with them. But then again, oh, I just had my meeting with, who did I have my meeting with? Had my meeting with, who haven't I picked on yet? A lot of names here. Susan. So say, oh, you know, I just met with Susan yesterday. So, you know, do I really want to... call her up, you know, and today, why didn't I ask that question yesterday? I should have. So the combination, just logistically, of formalized meetings and a, hey, call me when you need me, are a great combination. Next, here is now, look at this as delegation, but delegation, you tend to think of it as delegating to individual contributors. This is true, actually, at multiple levels of the organization. And there's two concepts I'm going to show you here. Often, this is actually very close to what they call, I'm going blank on it, situational leadership. But anyway, the idea is you're going to want to talk to people. Talk to your team or have your coach work with them or you work with them based on what they need. In other words, like, for example, if I'm all excited, I just started, I really want to learn this. So I have high will, so to speak. I'm very, very motivated, but don't have a clue what to do. Then I need to be guided. I need to be brought by the hand and say, do it this way, do it that way. Here's your login ID. Read this stuff. Give it a try. Let me see how it works. You're really guiding them through the process. If you have someone working with you who's done that task 1,000 times, they're very highly skilled at it, but they're sick to death of working on it, but you have to have them do it one more time because Jennifer is on vacation, then what do? Is you have to basically be talking to them from a motivation perspective. Now, if they have low will and they have low skill, in other words, they don't know how to do it and they really don't care, then, you know, you'll have to direct them. This is micromanagement. One of the people in my classes said, oh, yeah, if they have low motivation and they don't know how to perform it, yes, they definitely should direct them. They should direct them for the door and hire somebody else. So anyway, but this is a way to think about it. Certainly, if they are motivated to do the work and they're skilled, then just say, ah, go do it. Now, these tie very closely to another type of sort of leadership, overseeing, delegation, whatever you want to call it, the 5 levels of freedom to act. The first one is do exactly as you're instructed. That's micromanaging. That's directed. But you know what? When I'm first hired, if I'm going to do a task for the first time, I want to be micromanaged. Why? Because I don't know what the heck I'm doing. I don't know how to do it. I don't know who to call. If I do it, I'm not sure that this is right, what they want. Micromanage me a little bit. But then, you know, as my skills or as anyone's skills increase, then there's more levels of freedom to perform. So, you know, I've done it a couple of times, or it's a new task, you know, I'm getting the hang of it. Then the answer isn't do exactly what I say. It's go figure out some options, come back and let's talk about it for further instruction. They do a pretty good job at that. Next time it's, hey, in additional options, you know, that we could do, come back, but give me your recommendation. The recommendation is great. That's wonderful. If it's not, it's a teaching moment from you to the person on your team. The next is, you know what, I trust you, go make the decision, do the work, but let me know how it went in the next status report. And then full delegation is you're saying to them, you know what, just go do it. If you have any issues, give me a call, you know, moving it from me to you. So anyway, these are ways to consider as you're growing your team. You're a director, you move someone into a manager's job, they're probably going to, they've never led people before, they're going to need a little bit of, the level one here, you know, the little bit of directing and guiding, so to speak. But then, you know, as their skill, and quite frankly, not only their skill, but their experience increases, you know, their level of confidence increases, is you can begin to move them down the line. And this could be very quickly, again, depending on the person and the task. So then what you do is you have to say, hey, did you hire the right person? Are they promotable? So from here, what you have to say is, do they fit? You know, there's risks of bringing in all new employees. Do they fit the organization? Do they have the ability to gain the skills and knowledge that you thought they would, or is it less than expected? Because, you know, now hiring can be reduced on the person you brought in. If you bring in employees internally from different roles, yeah, they might not be good at the role, but at least you know that they like the company and that their other managers said they were doing well. You know, people who previously worked for you, you're going to know a lot about them and if that's going to go well. Acquaintances from professional associations, as I mentioned, SIM earlier. And, you know, others you know from, you know, others you know or previously worked with. And then from all of them, then there's the question, do you see future potential in this employee's promotion? Some people don't want promotion. I know people who are individual contributors and they said, you know what? They've asked me four times if I want to take a supervisory role and ain't no way I ever want to do it. They just have no interest. So as a result of that, you know, you don't want to promote them. Even if you think they're the right person, you think they could do it. I have a friend who was, you know, best techie becomes the manager in a lot of cases, promoted into a manager's role, did it for 10 or 15 years, was actually interestingly quite successful at it. And then, you know, his mantra was management would be great if it wasn't for the people. And what he did was he ultimately left the position. Next is socialization. What socialization is it's, you know, basically it's you're further getting the people to be involved as part of the team. You're integrating them in to what it should be. Training, and I got a couple of slides as you might expect behind each of these. Now, you know, you're nurturing them, you're training them beyond the initial part of their job. You're mentoring them, you're giving them increased advice. And a part of that process is sort of preparing them for promotion if you think they're right, and then being motivational. But now let's go through each one of these individually, or individually, I should say. Is that socialization? You know, you want to provide a social advocate for them, someone internally who they can talk to, sort of a buddy, so to speak, for lack of a better expression. You know, provide personal introductions and so on. Also is in-person activities. If you have lunches and things along that line, always make sure to include them. And you know what? If there's an internal joke and they're sitting looking at you funny, say, oh yeah, what that joke was about is like a month before you were hired, this happened, blah, blah, blah. That will be of great value when you're to them, because it's bringing them again more up to speed, but from a social perspective. And if it's hybrid, make sure that their cameras are on and everybody else's camera is on, and they get to talk a little bit. They get, because once you put a name with a face, it's a very, very different situation than you know, just it's the voice or it's the email that you received. It becomes much more, let me say, personal in its nature. Now let's talk about training. Is that think outside the box. There's lots of people where you can, places you can be training your team, you know, without a lot of money. First is your organization internally, all those things, technical or particularly the soft skills ones, your HR organization internally probably has some great classes that your team and you even could sign up for free. You know, vendor sponsored, you know, if you're hoping to do the next upgrade into, I don't know, Azure, I'll pick on a different one, into Azure. There's lots of free webinars and YouTubes and other stuff that you can come in. Again, at no cost to you, but helps you building your class. Night classes at local universities, cross training, which gets back into sort of that coaching and mentoring role. Brown bag lunches or classes, even if it's virtual. You know, sign up for Coursera, get a free class there, or you know, pay the $49 or whatever it is if you want to support them. They're a great organization. And then show one of the videos from it in each one of your staff meetings. You do that over the course of, say, a quarter. You know, would that be about 12 staff meetings? You've gone through a whole technology undergrad or graduate class equivalent in videos in your staff meetings, and they all have that common now language and experience. Free online videos, Discussions on on internal job boards. If you go external, suggest it to people. But I will say, let me say that some of the social correctness that you would require in your office is as far away as possible in some of these discussion boards. So be careful. Next is vendor presentations. Bring in one of your vendors and say, hey, what's going to be in the next version? They'll be happy to have the salesperson come in if they think you're going to upgrade. Presentations from the business people you're supporting or just local professional associations. You know, there's huge advantage in this for you. Next, mentoring. You know, mentoring can take many forms. You know, it can be, it can take the form, there we go. It can take the form of coaching, maybe even being a role model. You may have someone who is a role model that you don't even know them. They don't know you, but you say, gee, how, you know, I really like this person. I read their biography. What would they do? That's actually a form of mentor also. But there's also special mentoring, which I'll talk on, you know, just to drop more here. What special mentoring is this is where, you know, you really like them, but you're really trying to push them forward more quickly. You know, or maybe it's someone who you'd really like to promote, but they really got to get this thing fixed. They're terrible with business users. Could be skill enhancement. You want to promote them to a tech lead position, but maybe you want to give them skills and delegation and things along that line. Or just leadership practice. Have them be a mentor to a younger person in the group on how to use a technology or whatnot. And then just watch them. See how good of a job they do really assisting people in that manner. Next one, motivation. Now, this is really interesting. This isn't usually talked about from a motivation perspective. It's actually an influence perspective. But the way that this one works is that, in fact, I love their line here. I put in the words and motivating. But influence and motivation is possible when you have what others want. And this, look to dig more deeply into this one, because this one slide actually could be its own webinar. I think it was at one point. But anyway, is what motivates individuals that work for you? It could be the vision that you've come forward or the company's vision of how to move forward, doing things better, you know, moral, just wanting to do, you know, moral and ethical correctness. We're going to do it this way because our company is really helping people. We're, you know, a municipality and we want to do what's right for the citizenship, all of this kind of stuff. It could be task related. In other words, providing them the resources needed. Could be recognition. And I'm going to tie this to the next one, actually to this one here, which is gratitude, number five. So let's say, for example, that I work for Mike, and Mike knows that I really like to get recognition for my good work and visibility with senior management. And I like to be thanked for the things that I like. He could send me one email that says, hey, Eric, thanks for doing such a great job on that project. I really appreciate it. And copies maybe Monique, who's my boss, who's his boss. So I look at that and I say, wow, I'm recognized for doing a good job. My boss thanked me and great visibility. Wow, that's awesome. Because what's the holy grail, particularly working in a hybrid environment? Hybrid environment, we should be talking to our boss a fair amount, but we don't in a hybrid or virtual environment get to talk to our boss's boss as much. By Mike copying Monique, Manrique, if I'm pronouncing it correctly. If not, I apologize. To be able to really connect with me in that way is that I got that visibility. It really enhances the, my role and my flexibility and my motivation within the organization. So from here, there we go. You're ready to promote them. So what do? Is I'm going to talk here first about job families. You know, if you're not using job families internally to promote your people and keep them motivated, do so. In this case, you see here, it's going from like an associate's degree to a college from associate BA to a BA to a senior BA. You're growing people in position. An example of this can be used in multiple other job families. Because why is it? You have someone who's a great business analyst. You know, they came in, say you came in at a BA level. 2 years from now, the only one that they could be promoted to is your job if you're the manager of the business analysis department. But you can promote them in line and say, hey, been working for us a couple of years. You did great work. I'm promoting you to a senior business analyst. Couple of years later, again through great work and more, you know, more experience, you promote them to a principal business analyst. You can do this within like from manager, give you know, to a cost center manager, from a tech lead, etc. But the thing is if you have specific lines of promotion where people can go, not only does it give them an idea of the things that should be learning and give you an idea on what they should be learning, but it also keeps that next promotion just close enough that they're not going to leave. They'll say, well, you know, I'm so close to getting promoted here, I'm just going to wait for that promotion, which comes with another raise and something great to show on their resume, etc. So anyway, is that don't underestimate the power of incremental promotions from both a motivation perspective as well as from an employee retention perspective. So then you've done this, you've promoted people and so on. And remember that wash, rinse, repeat is that then you've promoted them into the new role. Maybe it's just from an associate BA to a BA, or it's from a manager or a supervisor to an IT manager or anywhere else. Now, evaluate them. How are they doing at that? Could they be moved to a next position? Continue to, you know, to nurture them, to gain to their skills. And this is how true IT management bench strength, the pipeline, really moves forward, because if you have lots of people in unison moving forward, you know, one, you know, at a time, is that as people retire, as people leave, you can always fill from underneath. But I'll say to you here, don't underestimate the, you know, the continual need for learning and mentorship going forward. It's not you did it once and you're done. No, it's continual required knowledge and experience moving forward. From here, as we're moving close to end, what I'd like to just tell people is, first of all, thank you for being with us. But also, we do webinars on a monthly basis. This month coming up, we have two. We have one on April 1st on making the IT management move. And then we have one on April 19th, which is the traditional one of our next monthly series, which is on introducing new technologies to IT in the organizations, whether that be AI, robotic process automation, and others. And that's on the 19th, April 19th. They're always on a Friday. Should you wish to add to our research, some of which went into this, please do. Just go to the website, the same one that you signed up for this. Click on research. Takes about 10 minutes to go through this, but we'd really appreciate it to gain even more knowledge about how to identify and grow future potential IT leaders. Organizationally, we're the governing body for two certifications in IT management. By some of the names here, I know that some of you have taken the ITMLP, which is for soon-to-be managers, up to about 5 years of IT management experience. And the ITMLE, which is, I like to refer to as manager of managers, up one more level. So both of these are offered virtually, the MLP on a monthly basis, the ITMLE on a quarterly basis. So we'd love for you to join us. The highlighted ones, there are new modules we just added in this, actually, in the last. We're continually updating them to keep current. But to the MLP, we added an IT manager's perspective on cybersecurity. And into the ITMLE, we've added in an IT leader's role in AI. So again, wanting to keep up with the times and keep them current. For those who would like to, rather than a 3-day class, take something that's more ongoing, we're actually running two of these classes now. One just started, one started a few months ago. We'll be starting the next one up in October. This is a 12-month, it's not a certification, but it is a certificate in IT management and leadership studies. There are 12 sessions. It meets once a month on a Friday, most likely in the afternoon for a couple of hours. That's afternoon Eastern time, so it's good for folks across the country. Our next one is going to be starting in October of 2024. So if you're interested, drop us an email and we'll let you know when it ends up on the schedule. From here, as I'm running out of time and running out of slides, I'd just like to thank everyone for spending just shy of an hour of your life with us. I hope this has truly been of value. Thank you so much for joining us, and have a good weekend.